Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, well, and we are back with you this week from Port St. Lucie, Florida, and Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Columbus, Ohio. And this is the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell and Wayne Johnson and myself, Gwen Berry. And before we get started, gentlemen, I would really like to say that aside from the fact that we need the Clan Mothers from Turtle Clan to bring some wonderful energy and drawing energy to the state of Louisiana, it's been a big week, and it's finishing off with the tragic downfall of rain again in Louisiana. Yeah. Anyone listening, please send your best prayers, your best thoughts, your best energy to Louisiana and to all those people who have lost so much already. Please. So Jack and Wayne, and we do have a call-in, but I don't know if it's someone who is just listening in. Or who, you never know, guys, you never know.
Well, let's call them in.
I will open up the mic. Yeah, we have a caller from the 347 area code. Are you there, caller?
Hi. Hello? Hi, I was listening in. I'm not sure what the show is about. I was listening in.
Oh, well, stick around. Well, you'll welcome. Like it.
I was going to say, welcome. I'm glad to have you.
Okay, thank you.
Stick by.
Yeah, speaking of the flood and the things that are needed there, one thing that they don't need, they've got enough Play-Doh. Donald Trump made sure that there was enough shipments of Play-Doh to go down to the flood relief victims on that. So,
yeah.
Can you please, no more Play-Doh. We got that covered.
They don't need tokenism. They need some real help. And we're waiting for word on how best we can offer that as a group, all of our listeners and stuff. So welcome aboard, new listener. Where's 347? What area code is that? Where are you located?
I muted the lady. Just a moment. Oh. Where is 347, ma'am?
New York.
Oh,
New York?
Good to hear from you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Our agenda today, guys, is I don't know if you all saw the news this week, but there was a pretty horrific piece of footage come out of Syria after, it doesn't matter
yes.
whose bombs were falling, but this time it was Russian bombs and out of jet flights. And there was a boy that was in the rubble, and they've been calling him the face of war, but it really, if you saw this young fellow, his name was Omran Dagni.
A little five-year-old.
Yes, little five-year-old.
Yes.
That was so sad.
In total shock. But there's this a debate is going on, gentlemen, and I'd like your opinion, whether or not this is actually these images need to be out in the world so that we face them and we understand the grave concern and the grave need.
Agreed.
To be.
Well, in this country, we're so adept at dismissing everything if it's not doesn't have great entertainment value. There's nothing entertaining about the sheer horror of warfare and starvation that the Syrian people are facing right now. Those poor people, man, it's just a mess. Aleppo is a city under siege. It's really getting bombed by Putin and everybody, and it's a free for all.
It's been going on. It's been going on 5 years, but I wanted to finish. There is a big debate, and the debate is whether or not these are valid images, like Cronkite putting the Vietnam War on every night and bringing the bloodshed up, or is it something they call war porn? And a lot of people think it's wrong to put images up.
I guess from my vantage, from my viewpoint is that haunting image of that little boy, that,
yes.
and his face is just full of innocence, that is a victim of where his location happens to be, And I can't think, help but think about Trump and those that support him. They're wish, you know, just saying, no, no refugees. These are going to be, you know, terrorists that come to this country. Trust me, that little boy needs help.
Yeah.
They did the same thing with the Jewish refugees back in 39.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And trying to get them out of Germany, and they refused to have them here. Well, history is repeating itself once again in this country through Trump and his supporters.
Good point.
You know, basically, my heart goes out because it's just so torn up every time I see that image of that little boy. And for those who spew the hate and refuge and refuse him and his families to escape and come to this country for safety, you have no conscience.
Yeah, I agree.
That is irreprehensible.
I think it's important that people see the face of war, and this is the perfect face to present. And this little baby, he just has on a Nickelodeon T-shirt, and he's in total, utter shock. I don't know if you saw the CNN footage of the young lady on CNN who brought it to the, you know, who ran the news item when it came out, but she was in tears. It's easy to be. I mean, there's no doubt. The Aleppo group over there in Syria brought it to the world's attention, and they did it for this reason. This is 5 years that our civilized world has sat back and watched Syria tear itself apart. And
With a lot of help from outside powers.
Well, including America, because we are of the opinion, and this is government policy, that Syria's president, Bashar Assad, is a tyrant, which he has proven to be. Sorry about this, guys.
That makes dogs bark.
Yeah, doggies. Well, while the dogs bark, just let me interject, and for the listeners to kind of give them an update, too. That little boy, well, his brother died from his injuries of that bombing.
Yeah.
So
I think
his mother only has the traumatized of being shell-shocked, but now he's got to deal with the loss of his own brother.
I think his mother died, too.
That's just too cruel.
If I'm not mistaken, he's an orphan now.
No, I think his parents are still living.
But, well, you know, I don't consider that war porn because it's not put up there for people to salivate over and for people to rejoice over. It's a hideous, hideous picture, and it's something that really tears at your heartstrings. And if, unless you've got ice in your veins, that should just alarm you and make you feel absolutely horrid about war and about the bloodshed that's going on absolutely needlessly in the proxy war that's going on between the U.S. and Russia. And it's just insane, really. And we're walking by with our in our world of entertainment. We don't give a damn one way or the other. It's just, oh, it's just something that's happening, but it's not here. Oh, so what? Let's turn to the next channel. You know, we can't have a flippant attitude about this stuff anymore. It's real.
Well,
it's really happening.
Well, you said.
You know, Jeff.
Go ahead, Gwen.
It was Cronkite that had enough, and he kept running the pictures of Vietnam. He's the one who said you're gonna you know, he took a stand as a journalist and put his career on the line by feeding and promoting that they ran the footage. You remember we were kids, Jack.
We were pretty young.
Hudley friggin' Brinkley comes on, but when CBS came on and it was Cronkite, you could see there was footage almost every night, at least two, three minutes of footage that the American public had to see of, you know.
It was raw and it was real.
Especially,
and we needed that. Instead, we didn't need baby propaganda. We needed the real facts, and we got it from Cronkite. And God help you, Cronkite. Thank you so much for what you did. You were a true journalist and a man way ahead of his time.
Yeah. That, again, that was before news became a marketable
media.
Media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Corporate-owned nonsense.
Well, and it isn't everywhere, and it's actually quite ironic, I think, too, that Russian television has been running this the most, this Aleppo film that put out by the human rights organization. It's called the, it's an activist group. They're called Aleppo Media Center, and they're in Syria. They're an anti-government activist group. And what they're trying to do is say, look, world, this is what's happening to our lives.
Right,
you know?
Right. I've seen a few snippets of that on Free Speech TV this past week, and it's good to see that because most corporate media places very little light on it and really doesn't have much to say about it. And they presented the stark footage, and it was very good to see.
Yeah, and I will give CNN this credit for their broadcaster.
For breaking it, yeah.
Visceral. She had such a visceral, emotive reaction to it that it got picked up and played over and over again. So the little boy in the orange seat in the back of the ambulance has been called the face of war now.
Right.
And this war in Syria, I don't know if people even remember, but it was in 2013 that Assad had crossed a line by using chemical weapons.
The blistering gas is the ammonia, I think,
I mean, with children who were lying dead in near Damascus, and that's when we stepped in. That's when Obama said, that's enough. But it's so hard to fight a war like this when you've got people tangled up like this. I'm going to do my best, guys, to make sure this doesn't happen next Sunday at this time.
Well, it is a really a terrible situation, and it's you've got to watch this stuff. You can't ignore it. You can't that's there and that's not here and it doesn't matter. It does matter. Those are real people suffering real losses and real injuries and real grief and real hardship. And, you know, we don't have to smother them with money. We don't have to go out of our way that way. But you know what? We've got to have some place in our hearts and in our minds to be able to deal with this stuff in the best way possible. And if that means taking more of these refugees in, let's do it, you know. They're not terrorists. That's nonsense. These people are these are fleeing. These people are fleeing a bad situation. You know, it's just unbelievable how people can characterize this as terrorists. You know, it's just insane.
Well, the other part about this, too, is that this is something that's been going on with our government since, you know, 2013, because Assad stepped over the line using sarin gas on his own people.
And then,
this rebellion against him in his own country fostered this, then you had, with all of that warfare going on, you had the Dagesh, the ISIL people, coming in to take advantage, which they are now a presence there too, and now you have Russia on top of it. Also, it's a huge powder keg over there.
Oh, and it's terrible. Well, it's become a proxy war in many ways, and it shouldn't be that. Warfare is immoral anyway, the way it's practiced nowadays, especially with the military-industrial complex. But it's so pointless, and all it is designed to scare people, to make profits for the arms industry, and that is just so sick. It just makes you sick to your stomach.
Well, you know, the thing, too, here is that if people care about this, the one thing you can do that you can make a difference in is you can elect the people you think will do a better job at governing the military, and you can and foreign policy, which I can't say that I would immediately say that Obama has been wrong every time in this, because he stepped in gross human rights violations, not only us, but NATO did.
I
will say, you've got to remember, it's just not the United States or whatever current president is at the time. This is a global influence and has to be addressed through a global aspect, not just the president.
where this happened in Aleppo, it happened near, you know, a Doctors Without Borders.
Oh, yes. Their hospitals were bombed again.
Yes. And here's the thing. If you care, not only can you vote, but you can give to Doctors Without Borders.
Yes. Good
sometimes
point.
Sometimes you can only give $5, but it matters. It really does. Because this child was born the year that the sarin gas was dropped, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. That's a good relative relationship.
He has never known anything but war his whole life.
Yeah, imagine growing up that way. Good God. We are so lucky that we haven't had to experience that. And it's just terrible that it exists in the first place.
It is. I agree with you. And as you said, Jack, throughout all of this while we've been talking about it, you know, yes, we should accept Syrian refugees. I think we should always accept refugees, especially these political refugees. There's no excuse not to. We're America. You know,
right.
We're already.
Yeah, what is the Statue of Liberty? What is the phrase behind the Statue of Liberty?
Give me your tired, you're oppressed,
you're all this people that need help, need a new beginning.
Right.
They want them to come here to America. That's all these people are trying to do. They're not all terrorists.
Right.
They're not all out to destroy our way of life. They might not be assimilated right away, but neither were the Irish, neither were the first Germans, neither were the first French. You know, that's the way it was.
They said the same thing about the Irish, the Italians, the Germans, all those waves of immigrations that came in. There was always, has forever been that segment that says, oh, these people are just coming to invade our country and stuff. This is nothing but, again, the Klansman kind of hate mentality.
Yeah, and you know, every one of those people that came over here have made this a better and stronger country and donated to it in their own way and contributed to it.
And Trump has made his whole... a big part of his agenda of with the Mexican wave of immigration.
Yeah.
Or the South American. And basically all it is, and I know, you know
it's
a lot
just hate.
Of people. It is just simply hate. But thing is these are people that are coming here not only to make a better life for themselves, to make a survival living,
mm-hmm.
but a better life for their children.
Right.
Well,
that's what the real motivation is.
It's not just that he's focusing on. He's trying to backdance a little bit so that he can capture the imagination, not of any of the minor or minority races, as they're called. What he is doing right now is backdancing on some of these immigration and hateful speeches he's made to appeal to the Republican white woman who's educated in the suburbs, who's always voted Republican, but is aghast at him and has gone over to the Democratic side now. This is basically, he couldn't care less about any minority.
Oh, no.
You know.
It's the politics
of
fear. You know, it really is. It's fear and sensationalism, and it creates attention. And hopefully he thinks it's going to create votes, but he's going to have a big rude awakening on November 8th.
Yeah, well, Jack, I've stated in conversations that I've had is I will not cower in the shadows of your fears.
Right, right.
Well,
good point.
It's always been easy since 9/11 for the Republicans to, did you believe Rudy Giuliani?
What an absolute idiot. He's telling people, he's actually telling people that none of this happened until Obama got in office. What a liar.
It never happened. You know, Mr. 9/11 is now, the guy, and he's the worst one. He's
Mr. Non-Urban 9/11 is now denying 9/11. I mean, what an absolute idiot.
He's worst one on television right now. He is the worst freaking dog talking.
He's always been that. He's terrible.
Hillary's health. And what do they say? They said, well, it's all over the internet. I mean, oh my God.
Oh, give me a break.
Oh yeah, well, if it's on the internet, it's got to be true. that's the law.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only playing that base that Trump already has. And now Trump's being told by this new manager, if he wants to have any chance, he has to bring back the voters that he has, you know, he's ostracized.
Turned off and just, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. with his hate speech. And
yep.
It's so clear. But people are, you know, I had somebody today post on my Facebook. I posted a piece about how Trump was pleading to the black community, the African-American community, whatever you will go with there.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to know these days. But he was playing to the demographics of the black community in Michigan, not near any demographic of that sort, of course, a whole white audience, and he's talking to. And
right. Oh, that was in suburban Milwaukee, in a 99% white suburb.
Yeah, he did it again in Michigan, and he started talking about how, you know, since Obama, you've got no jobs, no anything, you know.
Yeah, nonsense.
The auto industry
right.
is decimated. Well, the truth is the auto industry just had its best year ever in history.
Right.
Thank you.
And he saved it. And I actually posted about that on my page. And then I had this one person post, he's a traitor. And they spelled the word traitor as in traitor, like, here's your pelts and give me the beads, you know.
T-A-R-D-E-R.
But please understand, I actually know the person, and the person is a very sweet woman, but she's been raised in the South and as a Republican, and she has the idea that it's just she sees people differently. And I understand that, but there's no excuse for hate. And there's no excuse for thinking that hate is okay.
Doesn't solve anything. Hate doesn't solve problems. Hate doesn't make the world better. It does is allow you to be against somebody and push them out of your realm. And what good is that? We're supposed to be inclusive, not exclusive.
Well, for the last 50 years, it's gotten people elected to office.
It does. Yeah. Well, it got a lot of people. It got a lot of Republicans elected in the 50s. They portrayed Democrats as being soft on communism and all that same old crap all over again.
Right. You know, look, the conservatives have got the president candidate that they deserve, and that truly represents the current modern conservative right.
Right.
The conservative right in this country.
Yeah.
You know, they've been cultivating their own ignorant, hateful, racist, homophobic base since Nixon came up with the Southern strategy.
Right, yeah.
When Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act,
yep.
Then the Republicans, and they sent the Maryland governor, Spiro T. Agnew, down south to try to roll those blue dog Klansmen, white Southerners, into the Republican Party.
And
it
worked.
It
worked.
They got them, right? And then that morphed into even more extremism of the Tea Party.
They opened up a Pandora's box.
Exactly. And it's like I said, many times, I'll repeat it one more time. In 2005, I warned Jack Kemp about embracing this hateful Rush Limbaugh-esque type of propaganda radio that was going to come and bite him in the ass. Well, today we have Donald Trump, and you're welcome.
Today, Rush Limbaugh is even pointing out all the mistakes that Trump is making. And that's sad. That's really sad.
When the pot starts calling the kettle black, there's something really wrong.
Exactly. Right.
But I don't know if you've really grasped the complete unfolding of what's gone on here. It's not just the Teapot people now, or Tea Party people. It's basically what has been referred to on Fortran as the alt-right community. What you have is conspiracy theorists and neo-Nazis and all kinds of hate rhetoric.
Yeah, it's all the Breitbart conspiracy theorist crowd.
Yeah.
Alex Jones and all those knuckleheads. They're all crazy. They've got a conspiracy for everything.
Yeah, and that's where the conspiracy stories are emanating about Hillary's health and where Rudy Giuliani is quoting from. And they've made this bed. They can lie in it. But how much of the American population do you think is buying it?
You know, I don't think that much. There's a segment, but not as much as we may fear.
No. You know, this one of the famous quotes from Lincoln. He says, you can fool all the people some of the time, and some of the people all the time. That's the demographics we're now referring to. But you can't fool all the people all the time.
That's right. And more of the people are waking up, and they're seeing Trump as a dangerous, inexperienced extremist who does not belong anywhere near the White House.
This chief executive officer of General Motors made the statement, public statement, saying, I have always voted Republican, but I will not vote Republican this year. I will vote for Hillary Clinton.
That was the piece I posted, actually. That was the piece I posted.
Oh, okay. Well, good for you, Glenn. Very good.
Yeah.
Because that was incredible.
Well, he's not the only one. There have been all kinds of former Republicans who have come out against Trump and will vote for Hillary Clinton. And are advising people to do the same because Trump is dangerous. He's inexperienced. He's rash. He's reckless. He's everything you don't want in a president. He's too dangerous of a man to have his fingers on the nuclear codes.
Well,
the insanity has gotten so bad that George Wills resigned his membership in the Republican Party. I am not going to be anything associated with this.
And
this
that guy was
nuts.
Mr. Republican for many years.
He was Mr. Conservative. Whether you agreed with him or not, he always spoke through his own logical argumentation and critical thinking, how he comes to his views.
Right.
But even he says, no, hell no.
Yeah.
Well,
so
credible bona fides for Mr. Trump, first of all, would be his experience for leadership. Well, if we take him as a businessman, we know what an abysmal failure as an American he is.
Numerous bankruptcies. That's nothing to be proud of. Discrimination against workers. Not paying, trying to screw vendors and employees. I mean, the guy, he's always trying to make a buck off everybody else all the time. And he's a charlatan.
He's a con man. Bottom line, he is a carnival con man.
Yeah, a carnival barker.
He's in business. He's a chiseler, and a chiseler is someone who looks to get out of paying the bill.
Right.
In order to, and he does that. He's done that consistently, and that's how
Look at New Jersey. He owed New Jersey like $25 to $30 million in taxes.
Yes.
And when Christie came into office, they made a little cozy deal. It was one of his great deals that he arranged. And he got it chiseled down to $5 million, so he paid that, and Christie looked the other way. I mean, it's just pathetic. You know, it really is. It's just disgusting.
Right.
And his tax returns would tell us what the New York Times told us today, probably, that he didn't want out there, which is he's in debt to Chinese bankers for over $650 million.
Hey, yeah,
ooh,
I did see that too. $650 million.
And those Chinese banks are backed up by Russian banks.
You know what's funny? And he's lambasting the Chinese for their trade policies. That is a real scoundrel, man. He's unbelievable, isn't he?
He's got an ego large enough to think he can win this. And he figures if he can win it, he can get out of paying them back. No, I think this is his biggest strategy in running for presidency, is to get out of $150 million bill. I think that's large on his platter. The other part about it is, here's a guy who's allowing his campaign now to be run by just the scuzziest that there are. Okay, these guys are scuzzy as hell.
I hire the best people.
They're scuzzy as hell. There was never anything good coming out of that. And he's now allowing them to push all this crap about Hillary, primarily her health, out there when he has no credible medical records out there. And
that phony doctor statement. I understand two of those doctors who appeared on that letterhead, they're actually long dead. And he wrote it in such a way it echoes his superlative statements. It's unbelievable.
It's written by a guy who took over his father's practice. He's a doctor of gastronomy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what does that have to do with general health? You know.
Yeah. Well, basically, it tells you the fellow.
Since when do I go to a bone doctor to tell me about my overall physical health? What a bunch of nonsense!
No, a gastronomical.
No, I know that's internal digestive organs and stuff.
And that's who this doctor is, he's given as a bona fide. Now the fact is that
it's preposterous.
His salutation wasn't even correctly written, and this was out before the American public, and it's not even credible. But Hillary Clinton has released all her tax records. Records, everything. I mean, it's all on the table. He's got these major loans to China that he cannot default on. You can't default on a Chinese bank. There's just no way you can do it.
Right, right.
And it's a non-allied country, too. So you have to wonder what's really going on there.
Under the table, you can be sure of that.
Yeah, China and Russia are not really allied countries. There's all the time. There have been since,
since the 1960s.
Yeah.
Since the Mao Zedong days.
And everybody's thinking that the upcoming town hall on foreign policy that will be on NBC next month between Clinton and Trump, it should be just between, and of course, a lot of Democrats are saying, well, we're going to have to be careful because, the way he just goes after people. And this is where I'd bring something else up, and I'm just being strategic for my candidate at the moment, but I'm also being, I think it's fair, too. I think the Libertarian candidate and I think the Green Party candidate should be included in those debates. I really do. I think that it should all be out on the table. And it makes it actually, if you have someone like Jill Stein talking about climate change and a lot of really good idealistic campaign issues that she's put forth, it puts Hillary's feet to the fire because I got an email from Jack Jodell this week that I completely agreed with. Her Salazar as her transition director makes me nervous.
Makes me very queasy.
Yeah, but they've rebuked that already because a lot of people did say things, and the Hillary side has said, you know what, my way or the highway, and these are the right people to have in place, and it's my as her policy.
Pro-fracking, pro-oil industry, that's just what we need.
But it's her policy, not his, that makes the difference, and that's what...
Yeah, but he'll be the one that oversees and helps select a lot of the people that will be in her administration, and if they're all pro-fracking and pro-TPP and all that stuff, what the hell good is that?
Well, here's
is that
the deal.
What we want?
No, but all week long that's been fired off at the whole campaign from Hillary down to Mook and everyone else that's associated, and that has become a very loud. It absolutely is not going to be the TPP. That's a no.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, and all you can do is take the word of the candidate on this. It doesn't help when she makes Salazar her. I agree with you there, Jack.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, and she still has Bernie Sanders that's going to ride her like a pony and look over her shoulder constantly.
But Bernie Sanders has become pretty much, Bernie has his voice with his people.
Right.
The truth is, too, that Bernie is not playing ball with the Democratic Party. He hasn't given them his mailing list or any of the campaign things you do when you hand over to the party candidate from your side of the street.
Well, so, Hillary has a pretty extensive list on her own, so I don't think she needs that many more mailing addresses. I understand your point, Gwen.
It's like there's still friction there. So,
yeah, there is. There always will be.
Because they're two entirely different worldviews going on there, and that's as it should be, I guess. Bernie is no, he's no fool. You know, he would not walk into the Oval Office and say no more war. You know.
No.
Because you can't do that. But we've got two other candidates who are basically saying that, you know, why pay for military? The Libertarian would put that money to other use. And so, frankly, with the Green Party candidate, Dr. Stein has all kinds of other ideas about how to use the military. The fact that they don't take into consideration the Congress of the United States and how that works really just blows beyond.
Yeah, they've been using the Congress as a rubber stamp for far too long now, both Obama and Bush before him. And that's disturbing because Congress isn't really doing its job. It's not doing oversight. It's just doing rubber stamping.
Well, with Obama, I'd like to know what rubber stamp you're getting from Congress when they've opposed him nearly every day of his presidency.
That's very true. That's very, very true. But they're not standing in the way of a lot of his foreign initiatives, you know.
Because it would be foolhardy for them, too, because the military has to be paid and run.
Exactly.
For them to, and that's what people who do not see the larger scope of what goes on in the Oval Office in Washington, D.C. are not putting on the platter when they're talking about who should be president. You know, it's a much larger chessboard than just, you know, but if Hillary weren't available for the job and you had the other three on the line here, I think you'd see the country go over to Jill Stein so quickly and make your head spin.
She doesn't have anywhere near the organization, anywhere near ready to launch a nationwide campaign. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise that she's not that fully equipped to do the job at this point. Because it would be an absolute disaster if everybody flocked over to her, but there's nothing to flock over to except defeat.
Yeah, but the point is that, you know, I don't think that this country, my point on that statement was, I don't think either way the country would flock to Donald Trump.
I don't.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. I think that a majority, I know this is what I would do, I'd write in Bernie Sanders in a New York Minute.
Sure,
and
sure.
That count. But the point is that the other point is that I'm just making a backdrop here of how unequipped Trump is to actually walk into Washington. I mean, Dr. Stein is a reasonable person with a lot of great ideas, but geez, what the hell keeps her from running for Congress and getting something really done?
Yeah, that was a good point that somebody made. She really should do that. It would help her get more notoriety. It would help her get more of a backing, a national backing, and it would take a little bit longer. But that's the only way I could conceivably see her getting strong enough and widely known enough and have a big enough following to become elected president. And I don't see that happening in the near future.
It's not only that, it's the qualifications. She really hasn't got the riffs to play the gig, man.
Right, exactly.
And, oh my God, Wayne, are you talking in the background there?
No, I'm laying here real quiet.
Yeah, no, I was talking about all of a sudden I come out with that. But
I'm sorry. You were channeling me, is what you were saying.
Yeah, I was channeling. They ain't got no job, man. I didn't know. No. But the point, you know, it goes flying back by. And so this week it's been about the reboot and the woman who is now the campaign manager for Trump. She's walking all over her own words.
She's actually a Pence person, you know. She's big on Pence's list. She's very, very anti-LGBTQ community. She's very, very, very right wing, and she's from the Pence fold.
Right, right. You know, the government, they now have proof the government has admitted to, yes, they are doing chemical trails from their jets. She's all part of that grass.
Yeah.
Well, apparently the Trump campaign is getting ready to put out, I don't know if you've seen them, but I'm in Florida.
Some ads are coming out.
Yeah, I'm seeing some of them. They aren't as nearly as impressive as the ones coming out from Clinton and Clinton's PACs. Clinton puts a lot out in these little tiny videos that are all over the internet on social media, and I got to tell you, they're great. Have you seen them, Wayne, on Facebook?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it's
really good.
Are you talking about the little children watching Trump on TV and just being dismayed by what they see?
That's
a great one.
You know, that would be one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
Or you know, just taking Trump's own words and his insanity of his own words, saying, "Well, here you go. Is this, you know, is this truly your candidate for president?" I'm just asking.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
is.
Yeah, it's you know, and that's the best way to, you know, it's like
I've seen some of that on Tom Hartman's program.
Yeah, during World War II, they wanted to censor all the propaganda that was coming out of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman from Hollywood who the government hired to basically do the counter aspects of it, well, at first at one time they were going to label them as top secret and not give them out to anybody, but he knew, he had a vision of, let's take Hitler's and Goebbels. And, you know, all these upper management of the Nazi Party, their own video propaganda clips, and play them here. Of course, at the time, our government was afraid that they were going to sway American people to be sympathetic to the Nazis. It worked in Germany. It might work here. But basically, before they could secure them and make them top secret, he went to the Hollywood producer went to the warehouse where these were stored and told the guy in charge of the warehouse what he wanted and why he wanted them, and that guy turned them loose before they could get them stopped. And that's what they put on all the newsreels. And his vision and what he saw was really going to be the helpful thing was, yes, people in this country were turned off by it. So it's the same thing here. Take Trump's own words. Take those of his advisors. Take their words, really present them to the American public in a mass way, and let the American public decide.
And it plays right in ingeniously to Hillary's theme of working together, and you get a lot more accomplished when you work together, and everybody's together to get things done. Stronger together. I like that.
Right.
Yeah, stronger together. And she really is putting a very good campaign out there as a politician.
She is, yeah.
You know, she's saying, and you know, when Trump goes in front of a microphone the other night and says, "What have the Democrats ever done for you?" talking to African Americans,
you got no job, you got no money, you know, you got no hope, your kids aren't working. Yeah, you need to vote Republican.
What about all the jobs programs that the Republicans vetoed or wouldn't even that tabled? You know,
it's just
ridiculous.
Tabled, right?
It's an insult to anybody that knows what's going on.
He marginalized African Americans, the whole community. I mean, how can you not even look at your own friggin' television show and see the difference? I don't know. But he marginalized the whole African American community as uneducated, poor, unable to get jobs, living in ghettos. In the whole freaking 1960s, 70s stereotyping.
Exactly.
It's just incredible.
It shows really how out of place and how he does not at all understand no grasp of what African American people are, what they're composed of, what their ideals are, what their goals are. He just dismisses all of that and puts them into one little convenient category that suits his purposes. That guy is wacko.
Gwen, I was talking with my cousin today. She's a very, very well honored educator. in Fairmont, West Virginia. And I told her about the show, and I said, one thing we do kind of insist on is the rules and the tools of your freshman English class. And what Trump just came out with was a generalized statement. All you black people are, you know, you haven't benefited at all by these by voting Democrats.
Yeah.
Again, a generalized statement, which in fact right there negates his argument right out of the gate.
But a lot of low information voters, they eat that stuff up and, oh, yeah, he's my man. He tells it like it is. He doesn't tell it like it is.
I'd like him to explain how Jesse Jackson ran for president as a Democrat. I'd like to have him explain how people like MLK were registered Democrats. I would like to explain how many black people in a given community are registered Republican. I mean, I'm not talking about the idiot savants like Ben Carson either, because there's something really out of whack with folks who are. But then again, there are a lot of African-American people who really are conservatives. They're really
are. Yes, no, it's a true statement, right. You cannot paint that with that broad brush.
No, right.
Yeah, but the majority of the African-American community in the United States of America, I'll bet you, goddamn dollar right now, are Democrats and registered as such.
Well, first of all, the polls all show that Donald Trump is ranging between 0 and at most 2% of black vote. I mean, he's almost as bad with Hispanics. How does he expect to ever get elected president when he's offended so many different people that are important voting blocks? It's insane.
Not only that, but women don't like him.
Women too. Hillary's got like a 20 or 30 point lead with him against him in the women category, women voters, you know.
And since the convention, millennials are joining her campaign. And they're being hired in this state right here. She's hiring millennials especially down here in Florida right now. Florida has quite a campaign getting geared up and going.
Trump's behind in Florida now too. That's great.
Yeah, by 5 points.
Yeah, that's
points.
Great.
That's
we got, and that's going to grow. You wait and see.
Well, he keeps reading off a teleprompter,
clumsily.
Yeah, he is pretty clumsy with it, but he's not used to it. Then he goes to basically making a gap. By the time he's over with the teleprompter or in mid-teleprompter,
every time he ad-libs, he screws up.
Well, yeah, it's like he makes this apology or this regret. He didn't apologize. He said he had regret.
Oh, I heard that was a bunch of crap. Anybody that believes that is out of their mind. They're so gullible, it isn't even funny.
See, the thing is, Jack, that he gave the regret speech, and as he's given it, he says, yeah, I have some regrets, and then he immediately catches himself because his ego simply will not allow him to say he has regrets. He says, maybe, you know, but no, really, really, I do, but maybe. You know, I mean, the guy is just incredible.
And especially if they may have caused personal pain. What an absolute jerk.
I'm sorry,
I'm being very opinionated, but I have nothing but contempt for such a shallow, phony, lying man.
Well, you discriminate and you listen to people and what they're saying, and you have a sense of self that goes beyond your own self-concern. You're aware of your community. It's the kind
of
thing.
I'm looking at the big picture. I'm looking at all aspects, philosophical, theological, sociological, cultural. I'm looking at all kinds of elements when I make up my mind. I'm not just honing on one narrow aspect.
Right.
Diversify your information and then come to your own conclusions.
Right, exactly.
That's logical, critical thinking steps.
Right.
But I'm coming to my conclusion as too. You're somebody who is basically, I could define you because of who you are and the way you espouse yourself and your thoughts and your beliefs and philosophies as someone who I would call a fellow liberal and someone who gives a damn about the community and other people. And that would make you, in my book, you would have always been a Democrat. You follow where I'm going.
Oh,
so
sure.
there's certain traits of in the last 20 years, it's become more and more. I mean, you could say the opposite, but also caring about the community and having self-respect and so of conservative Republicans, too. There was balance.
Yeah, yeah.
I no longer have that kind of view. I think there's nothing there anymore as far as Republican goes. When, you know, as far as the grand old party, that's over with.
That's over with. Lincoln's time is done.
Long dead.
Just for an instant here, just for a definition clarification, the word liberal, which was coined in the mid 1800s. Was really based on the Latin word liberate, i.e. as in being liberated. It just simply means that, hey, I am a free man. I am not going to be allowed to be in servitude to the lord of the castle and that kind of thing. You know?
Yeah.
And we can modernize it today. I am not going to be, a puppet, a plebe, a lackey, a flunky to someone else because I am a free man of my own free will and conscience.
And liberals aren't bad people. Liberals are concerned for the economy. They're concerned for their fellow person, male and female, black and white, all kinds of colors, all kinds of engenders, all kinds of persuasions here, there, and everywhere. They're not universalists, but they are very concerned that everybody has a spot at the table. And I cannot bash liberals the way that so many conservatives and especially the reactionaries love to do.
Say, hey,
well,
Rush Limbaugh in the mid-'80s made liberal a four-letter word.
Yeah.
Well, neoliberal has become a real big classification.
Well, those aren't liberals anymore. They've transformed it into something bad.
Listen, I always thought I was because since I was in school and I was 18 of my first vote. And I got to vote for Jimmy Carter. And the reason I voted for him was, he espoused a lot of those character points there.
Yep.
But he also was very, very conscious in his campaign about something that since I began voting, have always paid attention to. That's the ecology and the health of the planet.
Oh, yeah.
And where our resources were going and what we should be doing with them.
He was kind of the first green president, really.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He
installed
all those
solar panels on the roof of the White House.
Thank you, Jack. And it was Ronald Reagan who took him down. Cause that
took
was
him down,
liberal,
yeah.
Right?
What an idiot, yeah.
You know what?
Well, anyway.
Meanwhile, the rest
yeah.
of the world is leapfrogging past us in solar technology and the implementation of it. Now,
we're asleep at the wheel, man.
Solar panels coming out of California are some of the best and low cost, world-class competitive solar panels coming out of Southern Florida.
Yep.
Do you know why? Because of a conservative Republican who went into the governor's office there, and his name was Schwarzenegger. He is a huge ecologist. He is big on the environment.
Oh, but Gwen, he wasn't a true conservative. He's not a true Republican. I'm being facetious there when I'm saying that.
California Republicans, by and large, are not the same as the hardcore
Alabama,
Republicans we see
yeah,
dominating
yeah.
the South and a lot of the rest of the country, the rural Republicans and stuff. They're a little more enlightened, let's put it that way. While we're on the topic of enlightenment, let's I want to look back for just a little bit here at a golden year. I want to look back at the golden year of 1965, and the reason I want to do that is because for me in Minnesota here, it was an especially good year. First of all, liberals solidly controlled the presidency and all branches of the government, and that's why we had marvelous Medicare legislation, civil rights legislation, all kinds of good things came out. A Minnesota senator was vice president under LBJ at the time. They had just, the liberals had won a tremendous victory in the 64 election and were governing with great liberal principles. And another great thing for Minnesota was in 1965, we had the Beatles here. And 51 years ago tonight, I attended a Beatles concert in Bloomington, Minnesota, with the Beatles set up on a second base stage, and I sat with good seats on the first base side of the field, and I watched the Beatles perform. There are 11 songs. They're 30-minute set, preceded by Brenda Holloway, King Curtis, Cannibal and the Headhunters, and a Minneapolis group, black group called Sounds Incorporated. And it was a night I'll never forget. It was a great night, and we didn't have a sellout that night. Only 28,000 seats were sold, but regardless, there was a lot of screaming going on, and you couldn't hear well. So, but beyond that, that year Minnesota also had the All-Star game. We had the All-Star game, and we had the World Series here for the first time, too. So it was a big year for me, personally.
Good for you, Jack. Good for you.
It was a great year.
86 was my year. But I got to say, Jack, there's nothing like being at a Beatles concert. Now, I didn't do the Beatles, but I did Paul McCartney about 15 years ago. And we sat Joe Robbie Stadium. You have never lived till you have sat in a stadium and sang a song with 70,000 people.
Oh, I know. I saw that same tour.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was an incredible experience. With old Beatles tunes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. By the guy that penned most of them, a lot of them.
Well, right.
Yeah. But those were good old days. We were younger then, and liberals were in power, and they weren't ruining the country and the world. All this Reagan-esque crazy propaganda that came out in the 80s was insanity, and time has proven it to be insanity.
Well, and they had a president who walked in and got, you know, kicked out of office. But here's the thing, too. You're talking about the Great Society, man.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right, Johnson's Great Society.
Yeah, and, you know, thank God certain tenets of the New Deal still exist. Thank God. LBJ's Medicare and Medicaid have survived. Thank God. They've been whittled away at by the current reactionary Republicans, but they're going to survive. You wait and see. And because people need them, especially in an era of greed and the 1% taking everything and leaving everybody else with breadcrumbs. It's not – that can't last. That is unsustainable. And that's why liberals will rise again, and they're starting to rise within the millennial generation to a certain extent, and that's great.
I think so. I think they're going to have to go back to calling them liberals again. I agree with Rachel Maddow on that point. We are at the end of the hour, guys. So,
well, another good show. It goes too fast. There's still so much.
And we'll look forward to hearing from Sheree Foytlin hopefully next week. God bless her. She's really struggling down there, and our thoughts and prayers are with her big time. And we want to be able to send our help down there too, monetary or whatever else is needed. So hopefully she'll have some illumination for us on that regard too.
All you have to do is go online and Google Louisiana flood relief.
There we go.
And all of the sites that you can give to. And
well, we will certainly feature that next week in a big way. Let's do that, Gwen.
Yeah, I keep trying. Things keep happening.
and sometime, when I guess as we get closer to the election, we need to have Professor Ron Feynman back on to give us an update on his projections. And
We have to have Mrs. Wright back on, too, prior to her election down here.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
You know, we have some very good guests that come on to this show here, and very enlightening, very intelligent conversations.
And the nice thing is, every one of them is doing what I advise everybody else to do. Keep pushing forward.
There you go,
Jack.
You completed the statement.
Keep pushing forward.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jack, and thank you, Wayne.
Good night, all. God bless.
And thank you to our listener in New York, whoever called in.
That's right. Glad to have had you on board. Nighty night, folks.
And that's all we've got for you this week. That's all she wrote. We will be back next Sunday at 6 p.m. with Jack Jodell, Wayne Johnson, and myself. I'm Gwen Berry from Port St. Lucie, and that's all there is. And sorry about the dog, guys. Jeez.
Feed him some scrambled eggs, quick.